This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A few weeks ago, excerpts from sermons by the Reverend Jeremiah Wright Jr. of Chicago's Trinity United Church of Christ raised eyebrows and prompted questions to Senator Barack Obama. The church counts the Democratic presidential candidate among its congregation. Some of Wright's remarks range from provocative to inflammatory. Critics describe others as hate speech. Senator Obama rejected some of Reverend Wright's comments but refused to denounce his former minister. The controversy prompted many black writers and theologians to try to explain what some outsiders interpret as incendiary rhetoric. They say Reverend Wright's sermons have deep roots in what's known as black liberation theology. In a book first published in 1969 called Black Theology and Black Power, James Cone argued that to make Christianity relevant to African Americans, black churches must confront and address the burden of racism. Not all black churches subscribe to these ideas. In a moment, the view from two pulpits. Later in the hour, Swedish indie pop star Jens Lakeman joins us to perform and take your calls. But first, the black church and racism. We want to hear from you. How does your church confront racism, and is church the right place to do that? 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Bishop Forrest Stith. He's retired from the United Methodist Church. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Also with us in the studio, Bishop Henry Jackson, currently presiding at the Hope Christian Church here in Washington, D.C., and nice to have you on the program as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Bishop Stith, let me turn to you first. How different is what Reverend Wright's sermons say from what you've preached throughout your ministry?
Probably the language or the selection of phrases, but I hope that in my ministry for 57 years that I've attempted to be both a prophet and a personal deliverer of salvation. I hope both things are important.
And give us some background on black liberation theology. How did it affect your thinking? Where does it come from?
Well, there are two ways of looking at it. The terminology came, of course, from Brazil with the Catholic Church and their movement there amongst the people. But more importantly, it really has its history as far back as the Old Testament. And my understanding of it goes back to the prophets themselves who declared the liberation of the people and those who were in distress within their communities, and then evolved into Jesus, who we conceive to be the great liberator of people. And we can talk more about that later.
Sure.
But so I think it begins there, and to call it a current thing is to misunderstand its great history and roots.
And for a people who've undergone oppression for centuries in this
yes.
country, church was a place you could gather amongst yourselves and have your own people, your own authority figures speak to you.
Exactly. In the midst of slavery and eventually segregation, discrimination, and Jim Crowism and all the rest, there had to be an answer, and the answer came to an understanding of Moses and Jesus, who were the great liberators.
So would you consider what we're calling black liberation theology mainstream?
To me it is, but to others it is not, because its emphasis and priorities are a little different from traditional Western Christianity.
In what way do you think?
In Western Christianity, there was a sanitizing of the gospel of Jesus. So you eliminated some of the Beatitudes, in a sense. You eliminated the Great Commission that I call the Great Commission, which was Jesus' job description, that he is called to set the prisoners free and the captives and bind up the brokenhearted and to announce good news to the poor. All that was kind of cleaned up. The kingdom parables were pushed down, where they gave the kingdom to those who were poor and wretched, and put the ones who were rich into Hades.
Easier to for a rich man to pass through the eye of a needle. Yes, we
exactly.
remember that terminology.
Exactly, and many others.
Reverend Jackson, let's bring you into the conversation again. Is black liberation theology relevant to the church today, do you think?
I think it's a little bit out of step. I think that it's a voice or a message for another time. Right now, we're living in a unique moment in which we can solve the race problems. Recent book that we've written called Personal Faith, Public Policy says that there are seven urgent issues that only the church can solve in the world today. I believe that racial reconciliation is one of them. In fact, Friday we'll be releasing a letter from about 40 pastors commemorating Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, saying that we can in this decade end the segregation of the church and begin the process of healing America based on Christian love being the basis of our coming together. You know, the Bible teaches that we, when we are born again, are no longer one separate group of people, or I should say reverse that, we become a new racial group. It's us against them, not black against white, but the believing world seeking to win the non-believing world with kindness, Christ-likeness, and that kind of thing. And that was what was missing in the dialogue, or the messages, I should say, of Jeremiah Wright. It seems that his comments can be incendiary and tantamount to pulling a scab off of a wound. And I think that the kind of rhetoric that comes out in liberation theology sometimes is based on this. James Cone said in a 2003 PBS special that he was at one moment ready to leave the Christian faith because he was torn between Martin Luther King Jr. on one hand and Malcolm X on the other, and that he came up with this kind of understanding of things that way.
The synthesis, yeah.
The synthesis. And I think that the problem that we face is that we now have got to stand on the shoulders of the giants, King and others, and say, how do we bridge this gap? How do we do this thing of bringing together these disparate groups in America? And I believe faith can be common ground. So again, I believe we're in a moment. We have African-American running for the highest office in the land. Many of the myths of racial separatism have been torn down. We could heal this division now. And we don't need another dialogue. We don't need another coffee clutch talk. We need somebody to do something. And I'm calling on the church, the Bible-believing church in America, black and white, to end this thing called segregation on Sunday morning as a first step.
And Senator Obama did say, call this the most segregated hour in America. Yet, if you're calling for integrated congregations, aren't you, would not that threat the identity of the black church or a lot of black churches?
Well, black church was, I'm sure the bishop would agree with me, it was an aberration from the beginning, meaning we started black churches as a response to the fact that blacks weren't welcome in the church. Blacks were kept from receiving the gospel for the first 100 years that they were in America from 1619 to the 1740s in the First Great Awakening. The abolition of slavery was a part of the preaching of Wesley and others, and it was a social action that had to take place. So I think at this time, I preach in a church on Sunday that is a church in Dallas, Texas, that has a multiracial congregation. The pastor, white guy, 46 years old, has never been in a segregated school system in his own life. He doesn't see a divided America. He wants black people there. And these kinds of churches are growing. Most of the mainstream mega churches want to be multiracial. And so the segregated hour, most segregated hour, is changing.
And let me just turn quickly back. We're going to get to calls in a minute. I know you want to talk about this, 800-989-8255. But let me turn back just for a moment to Bishop Jackson and ask, you know, excuse me, Bishop Stith. And as you listen to that, do you accept this idea that maybe integration is the way to go here?
Integration, in its understanding, is a keen concept, one that I could abide by and have lived with for 57 years as a pastor and as an administrator of the church. Much of my life has been moved towards that. I tend now to move towards a different word, which is inclusiveness. Integration simply puts people in the same box together. It doesn't empower those with differences. It doesn't acquire the opportunity for many to be themselves in the fullest way possible. Mm-hmm. Inclusiveness does, however, and I think inclusiveness has to be the key because people still live in this country under oppression, in mass poverty, who happen to be black, and under great educational and family stress.
And just very briefly, black church also had its origins in the idea that white churches, white Christianity, didn't seem to have a problem with black slavery.
Exactly. Not only didn't have a problem with it, but the theology base of slavery was out of the church.
Let's get some listeners involved in this conversation. 800-989-8255. You just heard Forrest Stith, the retired bishop of the United Methodist Church. Also with us, Harry Jackson, the bishop at the Hope Christian Church here in Washington, D.C. And let's begin with Floyd. Floyd's with us from DeKalb, Illinois. Floyd, you're on the air. And I think I heard Floyd's line go away just as we put him on the line.
You scared him.
I think so. Let's go instead to John. John with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes. As my upbringing in Baltimore in a Presbyterian church as a youth, I don't feel as though race was addressed. And in my adult life, it was actually African Methodist Episcopal that actually I gravitated towards and actually caused me to grow in faith. So I think that it is part and parcel that when I go to church on Sunday, I need the type of message that's going to get me through the other 6 days of the week. The other thing is that you still have to realize that in this world, most of the, especially the corporate world, is still by and large controlled by white men. And if you don't get a sponsor or have a sponsor, your progression can somewhat be held up.
And you find those in church?
It is possible to find them in church, but I think more importantly, what I need on Sunday is the ability to deal with the other 6 days a week when things are happening in the workplace that shouldn't be happening in this 21st century.
And so you want Sunday to help you bolster you for the week ahead, or maybe repair you from the week you just concluded.
Exactly.
And we'll get comments on that idea. But we have to take a short break. So stay with us, if you would, John. I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay.
All right. John's on hold. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can follow what other listeners are saying on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We're talking about the variety of ways in which black churches deal with racism. Again, 800-989-8255. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about black liberation theology and black churches. Controversial comments made by the Reverend Jeremiah Wright Jr. put this religious philosophy on the front page. We're talking about what it really means and how prevalent black liberation theology is in America's black churches. Our guests here in Studio 3A, Harry Jackson, bishop at Hope Christian Church in Washington, D.C., Forrest Stith, bishop retired of the United Methodist Church. Is black liberation theology part of the mainstream where you worship? Is it what you want and expect to hear on Sunday morning? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's get John back on the line. And before we went to the break, John was saying what he was looking for on Sunday morning was something to bolster him for the difficulties of the week ahead in a world where white men pretty much still run much of the power structure. And Forrest Stith, what do you say to him?
I understand what he's saying, because you cannot separate the church from the context of which a people are. And what John is speaking of is the fact that in America, much of the world is still consumed and run by white males, and that persons who are of color have difficulty in jobs, in health, in educational opportunities, in the midst of epidemics and issues of all kinds they struggle with. And you cannot separate that from the context of a church situation. The advantage of liberation theology was that it addressed people where they were and what they were dealing with. That's what they did in Brazil. That's what they did in slavery. And that's what still needs to be done today. Now, granted, you know, it's not the same particular type of language you would use 50 years ago, but it still is an issue that has to be addressed because it's contextual.
Go ahead, Harry Jackson.
That's true of the gospel. The gospel's for individuals.
Right.
We believe in individual empowerment through the Word of God, not a racial mudslinging contest. And I think that's one of the issues that we have to deal with reconciliation or liberation theology, and that it can have the potential to bring forth hatred and that kind of thing. I referenced earlier a book, Personal Faith, Public Policy. I believe that there is an opportunity for us to deal with the spiritual root of racism. That is not a social issue. It doesn't have to do with the class. It's a personal issue. If the church would preach about racism from this perspective, that it's a sin, it's something that we shouldn't engage in, that we should not judge people based on the color of their skin. If that is preached in white churches and black churches, irrespective of where people live, then there should be the ability of that group of people to begin to come together around that revelation. To a certain extent, in the civil rights movement, the white evangelical church of the past turned the other way and failed to engage the culture for the sin of discrimination. And that was a problem. So what I'm saying is there needs to be a more balanced, fundamental gospel preached across the board, as opposed to having one group just harping on this one issue of race to its own detriment.
Mm-hmm. John, does that help you out? Does that help you out?
Part of racism, though, or discrimination, is natural. We see it, you know, throughout the ecological system. I mean, we're not, as humans or as animals, we're not trained to do things with folks that do not look like us or act like us. And in a lot of cases, it's sort of out of naivete, not necessarily out of a malice or that things are discriminated. Part of it is just lack of knowledge and lack of exposure.
All right.
The other way of putting that is that we're talking about systemic racism, too. And we're talking about what I would call collective sin as well as personal sin.
Mm-hmm.
And both must be addressed.
And what did you make, Forrestith, of the comments by Reverend Obama that his greatest complaint with what Reverend Wright had to say was that it seemed as if he was saying this is a situation where there had been no progress?
I don't think that. I think that Jeremiah Wright, if you listen to his sermons, and I've heard many of them, are outstanding and powerful. But he takes it a step further. He does call for reconciliation, and he does call for a reunion of faith and salvation, and he gives people a positive approach. But he does speak truth to power, and you cannot solve any issue that needs reconciliation unless you speak truth.
It's how you speak the truth, and yes. I would say that it's old-time rhetoric. We need a new civil rights movement. We need a new take on this thing. We need to help the people who are embracing the need for change, who whites and Hispanics and others, and encourage them with our language. And when you have a national platform where people are taping your words, presenting them to the whole nation, we need to beware that we no longer are street corner preachers or in a coffee clutch just talking among ourselves. Our words have power. And in that way, it was irresponsible what mm-hmm. Jeremiah Wright has said and what Howie said it.
And have you both considered that these excerpts from sermons, these tiny little clips of one of thousands of sermons that the Reverend Wright has to have delivered over the decades, these are going to be a feature of the presidential campaign should Senator Obama get the nomination
yes.
on the Democratic side. There could be television advertisements with these. Do you worry about about this kind of exposure?
I worry about it because I think it's demonstrative and of what persons who want to defeat him or persons of color, any time they look for an excuse. If they really wanted to understand Dr. Jeremiah Wright, they could do that, but they don't. They're looking for little bits of information, which were done not only in a context of a local church worship, but in a context of a setting of African-American and others who were present that were in a different kind of a context and setting. And people will take advantage of that, but you can't do a thing about it.
No. Let's get Ron on the line. Ron with us from Nashville in Tennessee.
Oh, yes. I was calling. I want to make a comment. The church that I attend now, it's predominantly black, but we do have white people going there as well as Hispanic. Yeah, we're pretty multicultural church. But what I see is what Jeremiah Wright said. I feel that it came up more with the time that he did come up with, because he was dealing with a lot of that more social injustice, and by him dealing with that, black churches had to adapt to a lot of the social injustices that was going on, and they had to just put their sermons around what was going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the difference between white churches is they deal more with a moral issue than they have a social issue, because we're all people. We're going to deal with what affects us. And the churches that we attend are going to be the same. And I just feel like that's the biggest difference, that we need to really have a big spiritual awakening, and we need to have a social movement in this country to where we all can come together as one, because I believe that's the biggest difference that's keeping this racism alive is blacks deal with more social injustices, and the whites look at things more on an intellectual and a moral judgment in their churches.
Bishop Jackson, is there talk about the generational split?
Yeah, there is a generational split. The caller is correct. My church is predominantly black. We have 22 different nationalities that worship together. I phrase it this way, righteousness and justice. White-led church in America typically deals with righteousness issues. How do people relate to God? And the black-led church has dealt with some social justice issues because we've been oppressed. But the Bible teaches that righteousness and justice together are the foundation of God's throne. In other words, the complete gospel has righteousness issues and justice issues. And what I'm advocating, I think what the caller means, is that there needs to be this balanced approach to both. It should not be that Jeremiah Wright's the only one talking about social justice. And in some ways, it's the failure of preaching the whole gospel for the whole man that has given place for liberation theology and maybe the necessity for it. And what I'm advocating is that everybody, black and white-led churches alike, Hispanic and others, would begin to preach a more balanced gospel with righteousness and justice being the heart of what we declare in our generation.
Thanks very much for the call, Ron.
Amen. Thank you.
Here's an email from Brian in Sandy Creek, New York. As an old friend of Bishop Stith from North Central New York, I have to say I was somewhat distressed by what was reported about Reverend Wright. I trust Forrest's judgment, though, and if he says Reverend Wright's preaching is in the mainstream, I'm going to try harder to understand what he said in that context. In any event, prophetic ministry is supposed to make one uncomfortable. Perhaps too many of us have lost sight of that fact. Is it supposed to make us uncomfortable?
Of course it is. What we used to say, that we need to afflict the comforting and comfort the afflicted. And that's a way of putting it.
That was for journalism, I think, not necessarily for the church.
No, we said that about preaching, too.
Okay, well, we may have overlapping missions in some respects,
yes.
But nevertheless, though we're not quite as busy on Sundays as you guys are.
No, I hope not.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Elizabeth. Elizabeth with us from Berkeley in California.
Hi, I just wanted to comment because I'm not African American, I'm white, but I do prefer going to African American full gospel churches. It just more of a resonates with how I want to have a church. But I, as a lesbian, I have felt very unwelcome in the full gospel church, and I hear the messages of inclusion and moral issues and social issues, and I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what the resolution of that is, you know, is that going anywhere? Is that being addressed? Is that something that I can hope to feel? I know there are white congregations all over that are welcoming congregations, and they work toward that as a goal, but I haven't really felt like there's any movement toward that for me in terms of being a lesbian in a black church.
Bishop Jackson, is your church inclusiveness include gays, lesbians, transgender?
Well, no, we believe that the Bible is a moral code for sexual conduct and ethics. And our code would not include people that are openly gay as people we would ordain, et cetera, et cetera. We have a conservative biblical approach to sexual conduct. And it's not aimed just at lesbians, but it's saying that if you are single and you're sleeping with someone who is not, you're not married to, that's a problem. We know in the black community with 7 out of 10 of our babies born out of wedlock, we need to get a handle on this issue of the theology of our sexual behavior.
If homosexuals and lesbians were allowed to marry, that would that be okay?
I don't support that either. I would say this. You've got to find a church whose belief system you are willing to accommodate yourself to. You can't go to a church and say, I like that church, change your beliefs. You've got to find a church that is preaching what you believe. And so I come out of a conservative evangelical stream of belief, and I would not encourage her to try to change the church. There are churches that believe differently than ours, and I think there are many of them in the land, and she would be happy if she found one that agrees with her position.
Is that satisfactory, Elizabeth?
Well, You know, I do tend to look toward the teachings of Jesus when I look for a church rather than the church's own take on it. And I haven't noticed that the teachings of Jesus have been exclusive toward anyone. And I know that within the Black community, like he did say, you know, X amount of births are out of wedlock, yet I do feel like it's probably that those very same people do feel included and welcome and loved in that church.
Well, so Jesus, if I can interrupt you, Jesus would love you where you are. He would affirm your personhood. And I think the reality is with Bible-believing churches that are more conservative, they would say that Jesus has a plan for your life, and he has a pattern for how you should engage in your relationships and even sexuality. That is not a lack of inclusiveness, but I think you would have to talk to the leadership of your local church. And I think there's a great theological divide that's going on now in America, in which churches are taking their stand denomination by denomination around these issues. And so I would hope that if you would come to our church, for example, you'd hear the preaching, people would welcome you and love you, but that at the end of the day, you'd have talks with people about how we feel you can live out your life successfully.
Elizabeth, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, that was Harry Jackson, the bishop at the Hope Christian Church in, excuse me, Beltsville, Maryland, not in Washington, D.C. I apologize for that miscalculation.
Suburban D.C.
And also with us is Bishop Forrest Stith, retired from the United Methodist Church. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get Hamela on the line. Hamela with us from Cincinnati.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that similar to another commenter who called, the Black church for me as a young, you know, woman growing up in a predominantly minority educational system kind of helped to sturdy my self-confidence as I was growing up. And so I can understand the way that caller felt. And so I think that the reason there's a need for what we say in the Black church that's slightly different from, you know, what you hear in other churches is because of what he was talking about. Every day when you're out in the world, you're reminded that you're a little bit different. Not really, you know, because someone says that you're not included, but because when you show up because you've called, they're kind of surprised that you're a brown person, you know. So there are subtleties in everyday life that kind of, you know, just kind of nab at you. But the church served as a way of saying, you know, you're accepted here. You have, you know, let's boost your self-confidence. You're able to go out and do whatever you need to do, no matter what you're faced with. And and that's through the power, you know, of Christ in you.
Forrest Stith, that seems like a pretty good prescription for anybody's church.
I would hope so. And I would add the fact that where one lives and how one lives and the realities one has to address make a difference when one comes to worship and one comes to be a part of a church. And the historical Black church has been just that for people. And until the context Amen. Of where people live changes, which is the world around us, until that changes, and there will always be a need of a church that can speak specifically to a person's needs.
Hamela, I'm sorry you were trying to get in there.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to add that when I was away at school and I didn't have the opportunity, because my parents wouldn't let me have a car, to go to predominantly African-American churches, so I went to church with my friends that I went to school with, I often was encountered with the same type of things that I was encountered with every day, like, oh, you're not really African-American, are you? You must be from the Bahamas. you know, or something unusual. Or you're the prettiest, you know, African-American woman that I've ever seen before. Something like that.
Well, Hamela, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'd like to thank our guests for joining us today in this conversation. Really appreciate it. Harry Jackson. He's the bishop at Hope Christian Church in Beltsville, Maryland, and co-author of Personal Faith, Public Policy, along with Tony Perkins. And we'd also like to thank Forrest Stith, bishop retired of the United Methodist Church. They were both kind enough to join us today here in Studio 3A. Coming up, Swedish pop sensation, no, not ABBA, Jens Lakeman joins us to perform live. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.